Hello, hello. This is the Sleon Productions podcast, where we interview business entrepreneurs, people related in business and the technology sector, and we give you great content, but also great value to inspire you on your goals and your values. Today, we have a special guest, Harry Ogburn. He is the owner of Ogburn's Hissen Solutions. He has helped a business development process that helps entrepreneurs and owners, business owners, learn the importance of working on your business instead of being caught up in the day-to-day grind. His unique system and personal devotion to the development of others has contributed to the success of hundreds of small to large business venture. And we got Terry on the show to the Sleon Productions podcast.
Thank you, Santiago. I appreciate you very much.
So I first found you through another podcast. And when I first listened to you, it was a subject that I really was getting into and really are interested in, is having systems in your business.
Exactly.
And of course, I read your biography, but can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure, I'd be glad to. Growing up, I was a military brat, and most people refer to us as brat, you know, but people don't maybe not understand. Brat means born, raised, and transferred. So you grew up in the, like I grew up in the Air Force, I was just like my dad. I, you know, got orders, I was moved, I was transferred just like the rest of the family was. But it did enable my dad to put good work ethics in us and, you know, military background and things like that. So growing up in business, I got fired out of the car business, and so I decided to open my own air conditioning company, like most technicians do. You know, most people, oh, I'm get mad at the boss and I'll open up something, you know, just go up again. And I never understood how much it went into building a business. But fortunate for me, I had a lot of mentors. I was able to develop mentorships and things like that. And they helped me understand the importance of working on your business. And then I was introduced to books like The E-Myth Revisited and things like, you know, books that teach you that type of stuff. And so then it just became natural to me to create systems and processes and things that help you organize your business so you can work on it, so you have more freedom to be in it. I'm like most of, when I was in the air conditioning business, I was probably like most of your young entrepreneurs out there working 10, 12, 14 hours a day, never seem to have enough time to get everything done that you need to get done. And you just get to the end of the week and you're exhausted. And I often describe it like a hamster wheel. You know, you get on this hamster wheel and you work, you work, you work, and you step off and then you say, oh, got to get back on it, you know. So teaching people how to work on their business became a part of my life, and I developed processes and standards that can work. And I worked for companies like Radio Shack, did turnaround stores for them. I took a company public, was one of five people that was brought in from the startup at a kitchen table. And you can imagine what it would take to go through all the way to an IPO. That took us 2.5 years. We invested about $5 million and we sold it for $13 million. It's not a bad return on your investment for 2.5 years worth of work. So a lot of education, a lot of my systems, they work in big companies, Century 21, Metrocall Paging, AT&T Wireless, a lot of big companies. And then in 2005, I decided to start my own. And I knew it was going to be small businesses that turned this country around, got it back on its feet. So I just focused on that segment of the market, and that's what I've done now for the last 15 years.
Yeah, I was seeing your profile that you worked with Radio Shack, AT&T, and it's something that many people don't understand. Like in a business, you need systems. How important is to have a system in your business?
To me, it's everything from the time, you know, how you want your people to clock in, or how you need a policy procedures manual, you need job descriptions. And some of your listeners out there will say, well, Terry, I'm too small. No. It doesn't matter how big or how small you are. If there's if you have to do accounts payables, you know, if you have to pay bills, that's called accounts payables. And you can go online, you can figure out what an accounts payable person does, match it to what you're supposed to be doing, and voila, you have a job description for accounts payable, accounts receivable, cook, bottle washer, it doesn't matter. But if you're all of them, then you have to know what those tasks represent. You need to know that. You also need to know, like with me, I turn my organizational chart upside down, meaning the customer is the boss, and that's a whole different system that I've come to learn over the time. And you know yourself, if a customer asks you, like one of my companies is Marine Max, and I tell them all the time, if a customer walks in and wants a yellow boat with a green bimini top, you're going to make it happen. So why don't you just go ahead and let them be the boss, and then just treat them like the boss walked in the room when they came into your store or whatever.
Can you name a quarterback, you know, professionally that you've seen that maybe have gone behind in the game, but you could tell that he had the right mindset to get back in the game, that he's able to overcome it? Can you name a few examples, or maybe just one quarterback that you really see a lot that has come back?
Well, yeah. I mean, and I'm going to say this because I'm a Buffalo Bills fan, which is – I'm kind of an anomaly being in here in the West – the Bay Area on the West Coast here. Everyone's a Niner fan here. But when you think about – what was it in the 90s when – the Bills were playing the Oilers in the championship game before the Super Bowl. And when Jim Kelly got hurt and he was right before the fourth quarter, Frank Wright was a backup quarterback. They didn't have a lot of playing time. And I believe the score was 31-3 or 33-3. And so there was just a quarter left. And Frank Reich came back, who is now the head coach with the Colts. He came back and basically put the team on his back and beat the Oilers and then went to the Super Bowl. So, yeah, talk about the next one up, you know, the next man up, just sitting there all season long playing against the, you know, playing behind the franchise quarterback, Jim Kelly, hardly getting any reps. And that guy steps into one of his biggest games and acts as if he's been playing all season long.
Yeah, that's something that I really do see in sports, you know, where you have the right mindset, even though it feels like it's the end of the world. You know, you're down 38 to nothing, but there's a possibility that you could come back and overcome it and win the game. It could be by a field goal or by a touchdown. Right. That's something that I definitely look at quarterbacks. In your book, you mentioned about your system MVP. Can you tell the audience a little bit about that?
Yeah, MVP stands for doing your daily MVPs. It's meditation, visualization, and powerful self-talk. And basically what this strategy does, it's a good strategy to connect the mind and the body. So before you're going into practice, before you go into any kind of performance or competition, what you're truly doing is you're getting your mind and your body connected. And you're getting your breath, you're getting into your breath, you're getting into where your feet are. And you're getting into a very meditative state, and you're starting to, as you lock in your energy, you work your energy all the way down your body with your breath, then you start to visualize whatever you want, you know, whatever that you're going to, that you want to perform or succeed in. And then you're going to end that whole breathing meditative state with talking, like saying words that are going to get you motivated, inspired, and that's going to take you into a positive direction. And so when you go through that whole MVP process, man, you're going to be your own VP. Who doesn't want to be their most valuable player, right? So when you actually do that meditation, the visualization, the powerful self-talk, man, you're putting everything back into your control, and you're connecting your mind and your body.
Of course, you have, you know, clients that are athletes and also former athletes. And a career for an athlete, you know, could be, you know, 10 to 20 years, sometimes like way less, you know. What do you teach athletes when they transition into a private citizen, I guess you can say?
Yeah, it's huge. I think transition at any level, it's a real thing. There's a lot of times where people put everything into their identity and they don't go on beyond high school. And so how do they deal with that transition? And to be honest with you, I work a lot with athletes, you know, on their craft, on their mental game. But I do work on an element of knowing they need to know who they are. Who are you outside of sport? And so if I can get you to do that while you're in sport, because what you like playing football is what you do, it's not who you are. And so we explore a lot of different areas of how we actually can identify who we are, because when we play sport, sometimes, most of the time, we let go of who we are so we can actually commit ourselves to this role, this athlete, and then we have to go commit ourselves back to who we are. So the more that we have that good relationship, that when it's time to leave the sport, we've already gone through that whole process of knowing who we are. Now, the fun thing is getting these athletes excited. Like, you get to transition out of sport. Like, I know you like have to, or you feel like you're getting pushed out, or your time's expired, whatever it is, or your injury, but you have to look at a transition as, I get to do this.
What do you think is going on in the mind of Tom Brady right now? Do you think he's in that, like, on the ropes of, like, he might retire, or do you think he's that athlete's like, no, I'm looking beyond. I am going to play till I'm 45. What do you think is going on in his mind right now?
Personally, I think he's there's a lot of talk about him right now, and I think he's embracing all of this. He's embracing – he wants to play. He's going to play, whether if it's going to be another year to 2 years. If he plays more than that, awesome. Good for him, right? But I think he wants to prove the world that he still got it, and he does. He does. I mean, whether if he's going to perform like he has 5 years ago, we don't know. He hasn't had the best weapons around him, but again – I think he's loving this. He wants to prove everybody that he still got it.
Of course, at the time of this recording, Eli Manning has announced his retirement. What would you tell Eli Manning if you spoke to him right now?
Man, if I spoke to him right now, I'd be like giving him a high five and a big hug. I'd be like, and I mean, he's done a lot of great things, and I think this is where you reflect. I mean, there's a lot of things that as an athlete, you need to reflect on your performances, practices, and games so you can get better. I call that a work on, build on, that whole process. But when you're actually transitioning out, this is where you actually look back, reflect, and really embrace all the love, the joy, everything that you've done. And if you need to go back and reflect on some, you know, bad games, negativity, so you can get lessons, then do that. But if not, reflect on it, rejoice in it, and then get ready for a new life. And he's set. He's got so many things he's going to get into, but I would just give him a big hug and congratulate him because he did some incredible things. I mean, he should be proud of himself.
So, Coach Arnie, obviously, I mean, for me, in my eyes, it feels like the coaching industry has become popular in the last couple of years. Why is that? Obviously, why is this like so popular lately?
Well, because people want help, but people are also looking for shortcuts. And I'm okay with both of those things, but sometimes the shortcuts aren't the best way because you still got to work hard. And if a coach is promising you to get you from A to Z without missing a few steps in the middle, it's kind of like doing algebra. I taught high school algebra for 5 years. And the reason that everybody hates algebra, right?
Yeah.
And one of the things I used to teach the kids is say, look, here's why algebra is important. Because it teaches you steps. And you might get the first step right, but if you miss the second step, then even though you do all the work in step three and four perfectly, you miss the problem because you missed a step. And that's kind of how life is, Santiago. You know, if you take shortcuts, at some point it's going to catch up with you. And so my problem with some of the, especially young coaches, and God bless them, because, you know, we didn't have this around when I was a 22-year-old, 23-year-old.
Yeah, exactly.
But at the same time, we didn't have this. I'm going to be a life coach, and there's nothing wrong with it, especially if you're teaching them, like, how to do stuff in computer and tech and stuff that I don't even understand. But when you get into life, man, that's a stretch. So at the same time, I think it's important because this friend of mine, his name is Jay Elliott. And this guy, we have him on a team because I'm actually working on an app. I think I might have told you this. And Jay Elliott is on our board. And Jay Elliott was the mentor to Steve Jobs. He used to work at IBM. And Jobs met him at a coffee shop back in the early 80s. And they just started talking. He was probably, I want to say, 20, maybe 15, 20 years older. And Jobs tried to convince him to come over to Apple. And he goes, I'm with IBM, doing well. Until Jobs basically convinced him, because that's who Jobs was, hey, you need to come over here and you need to meet my guy, my mentor, my coach, even though coaching hadn't really been termed yet, because Robbins is the one who gave that term out to it. But so he came over, and he was with Jobs at Apple until Jobs got let go by the board. But he was, you know, basically he was the guy that Jobs went to for advice. And so, you know, coaching, if it's strategic and it's done for the right reasons with somebody that has the right experience, can allow you to skip over steps, but you got to know where you're going to get there. You know, you just can't miss things because you're going to make big mistakes. And I think sometimes an inexperienced coach can create a bigger mistake because they haven't seen it. They haven't seen it. You know, look, I'm a big fan, Santiago, of the old Mike Tyson advice. You need to get punched in the face.
I agree.
Because then you're going to find out who you are. And if somebody protects you from getting punched in the face too much, I think that could be a problem. I did a talk one time many years ago, probably 10 years ago. I said, don't wait till you're 50 to get kicked in the teeth. It hurts a lot more. The best time to learn how to get punched in the face, as Gary Vee would say, is now. If you're in your 20s, get hammered around a little bit. Get punched around. Figure out what you don't like, what you like, what works, what doesn't work. If working with a coach helps you, getting burned by a coach helps you, great. But don't – I wouldn't personally rely on a young coach to get you there unless it's a specific place, like with a maybe in software or in something technical that they really are good at. Although, you know, I mean, look in the NFL, you know, 2 years ago, even this year. 2 years ago, a young coach got his team to the Super Bowl, but he got beat by a very experienced coach that basically outcoached him. This year, you had another young coach who got him to the Super Bowl, but he got outcoached by a very experienced coach that exposed him. So, it is what it is. I'm not making it up because those are real life experiences. So, depending on how you want to spend your dollars, I would be careful on spending it on somebody super inexperienced, and you could be 40 or 50 and be inexperienced, without having a very specific thing that you want, like a relationship, a business, a book, a software situation, because unless someone's been there, done that, it's going to be tougher, I promise you. Or they're going to give you an opportunity to go through it with them, and maybe they'll give you a break on price. I don't know.
Arnie,
but I've talked to some experienced young coaches, and you'd be surprised what they know. It's pretty amazing.
See, when I first heard you in this other podcast, I always had a independent spirit, always believe you got to go out there, go to the next level as much as you can. And for you, it just reinforced what I believed, you know. It feels like I was like the only guy that believed that around my area. In your book, you talk a lot about marriage. And can you tell us a little bit about that portion of the book?
Well, that was, there I was with five children. My baby was 7 months old. My oldest had just turned 10 when we found ourselves alone. And 3 years later, because I wasn't willing to rush into divorce. I had, honestly, practically speaking, no way to benefit from pursuing that at the time. And I wanted to see if the family could get back together for the sake of the children, even though you're not supposed to talk about that so much anymore. But my husband chose to divorce me and remarry. And the 11 years I spent by myself, I spent at the time, it wasn't a really big thing in churches to have the single parent Sunday school class. I sat in the married couples class for years because I was married. Once I got divorced, I felt like I didn't have a home. And it was a beautiful thing that happened, that there was a college and career class. Well, I'm 30, you know, and everybody in that class is 20 or ish, at least. No, I don't really think I fit there. That's even when I went back to college, I still don't fit there. And this one friend of mine kept inviting me, please just come back to the married class. It's okay. We still love you. Please come back. And finally I did. And that really was worthwhile. I mean, these people had children the ages of my children. And there was still a lot in common, even though I was a single person. Shortly thereafter, they started the single parent divorced person's Sunday school class. And I felt that I had a greater advantage, though, because sometimes, and I spent my share of time doing this, too, that single people will sit around and talk about how their lives would be better if they were married, or how nasty their ex-husband is, or, you know, here's the latest thing that happened to me. And you do need some of that, let me share my burden with you. You do need that. But my two best friends were both married. And the beauty of that was that, you know, one of my friends, I call them my best friends, which I understand you typically that means one person, but I have two. So one of them was dealing with her husband's chronic illness. And that made her life not very easy, made it very difficult. She became the primary breadwinner for quite a period of time. And for example, when the state of Pennsylvania, she was a state employee, when the state of Pennsylvania does not pass their budget by June 30th, you don't get paid. And 1 year, it was 6 weeks that they went with no paycheck. So just because I was a single mother didn't mean that my life was harder than anybody else's. The other woman, who's my best friend, her husband was a police officer. And she watched him put on his Kevlar every day and go out and work between 8 p.m. and 4 a.m. and deal with the worst of the things that were happening. And believe me, the worst of the things that were happening in our city at the time. So I do remember also making my wedding dress as I'm approaching remarriage, and I put my dress together and I went over to this friend's house and I asked her to pin my hem for me because I knew that she would know how to do it correctly, that it would look right. But I arrived on the evening that she and her husband were having conflict. And as she's sitting there with pins in her mouth, she's saying, "Are you sure you really want to do this again?" So I've actually thought of that a few times in the ensuing years of her warning me, so to speak, because there's that tendency as a single person in a difficult situation to say, here's my way out. And it's really your way into a new set of circumstances that might be just as hard, just as challenging, more challenging in some ways. So, you know, especially when I was alone for 11 years, I get used to being alone. I got used to making decisions that I didn't have to ask somebody's permission, or we didn't have to sit down and work this out with, you know, we have an extra $100. What are we going to do with it? And it's like, no, I just decided before me. So there was a big adjustment in that. And I think having had married friends as opposed to simply surrounding myself with single people really helped me to see that, you know what, life's hard the whole way around, and expecting something to come like a magic wand and make everything all better is probably not realistic. And so when you're in that difficulty, then later on, you can say, yeah. And that watching them stick through it, one of them, my friend whose husband was chronically ill, they've been married 45 years. So watching people stick it out like that, and for better or for worse, in sickness and in health, and for richer or for poorer, because everybody's times go up and down, that really makes a difference. And that's something that we need to be showing our children, I liked that my kids had these places to go and play with other friends where they were seeing a mom and a dad together. So not everybody gets to see that. And I think that's crucial, that that you put your kids in a position where they get to see other people interacting that way and, you know, working the thing out in the kitchen with what are we going to do today or how are we going to do that? How should we handle this situation? And if you spend enough time in somebody else's house, you're going to see that kind of situation and you're going to say, wow, these people have something that's not happening at my house, but there's a situation that becomes reality to them. It's not just something they see on TV that appears to just be fantasy.
What would you tell your 15-year-old self?
What would I tell my 15-year-old self? My 15-year-old self, I would say this, and this is something that I actually posted recently on Facebook and all the other social media platforms, and it stands out to me for many different reasons, but the biggest one is I firmly believe in reminding yourself of different messages on who you are. And the message is this: you are braver than you believe, stronger than you seem, and smarter than you think. Don't give away that power within you. I think at any given moment, that's always there. And in my opinion, it's always true. Because every single day when I approach life, it's really just about learning how to deal with the unknown. I'll never know enough to make a particular decision. I'll never know the full story when it comes to making those decisions. But choosing to remind myself that, hey, even though I may not know those things, I already have the skills within me and the understanding to still keep moving forward. So those messages continue to remind me that, hey, whatever I'm going through, whatever the challenge, whatever the obstacle, whatever it may be, is that I have the tools within me to get through that thing and to solve it. The time that it may take is a little bit longer, but I think that's also one of the truths about life, is that every single thing in life has its own timing. So whatever you envision in accomplishing in a day or a week or a month, it may take significantly longer or it may happen in a split second. You just never know.
Not giving power away. That is definitely the key thing there. And you know, keep going what your goals are. Oleg, what is the best way to reach you online?
The best way to reach me online is probably the same exact way that you and I connected, and that is through LinkedIn. Now, people can also find me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, whatever it may be, but most of my time is spent on LinkedIn. And the reason why is because I've seen incredible benefits from that platform as far as how people connect and why they choose to connect to begin with. And that makes a big difference for me, is that people are looking to connect, not only grow professionally, but also personally in different areas. And I'm someone who actively chooses to engage in those elements of growth, of wanting to better understand as far as the topics that I may know now. And so LinkedIn is probably the best way for people to get in touch with me.
Oleg, what a wonderful time I had with you. Very motivating, very good start for the day. I am motivated to have, to finish strong this Friday. And I am really, really excited to have you. Any closing words before we end?
No, the biggest thing is I want to say is this, is I'm extremely grateful for you. I'm grateful for you and your platform and the different opportunities that it gives for other people to engage with those who are able to be a part of this show. The thing that I want to leave people with is that you're never alone. You're never alone along this journey. It is platforms like this make it possible for you to experience that feeling that you're not alone. So if there's anything that I'd like to pass on to you in particular, it is keep doing what you're doing. Don't let anyone stop you from achieving or pursuing your dreams, because you're already making a difference. And as long as you're impacting at least one person's life over the course of your day, in my opinion, job well done. It doesn't have to be any more than that. And in fact, in this particular conversation, that's really all we can control, right? Is that person on the other end. We can't control anyone else as part of that process. So I just want to say that and encourage you that you will face challenges and obstacles along this journey of continuing to evolve this podcast. But don't let that stop you, because you're making a difference in someone else's life. You made a difference in my life, and I just wanted to let you know that.
Same here, Oleg. Oleg Loheed from Overcoming Odds, I appreciate you coming on to the Sleon Productions podcast.
Thank you.